Hi, this is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
Where this is the Space Show with Andrew and Jay. I asked you earlier, do you know the name of Australia's first satellite? In fact, do you know the name of the first satellite? Well, we will reveal all during this program. In his 1989 book, Fire Across the Desert, Peter Morton wrote, and we quote, "Did Australia, once upon a time, really have its own presence in space? Did it really design and build all by itself the first satellite ever put into orbit from Woomera? The idea sounds almost fabulous today. Few people, probably, can remember the occasion at all. Yes, it did happen as long ago as 1967. End quote. Peter Morton noted that the Weapons Research Establishment satellite, RESAT, yes, that's the answer to the question, RESAT was, at least from Australia's point of view, both a modest and an outstanding achievement. From conception to launch, RESAT took a mere 11 months and it cost very little. On this evening's and next week's The Space Show, we tell the story of RESAT, which was launched 50 years ago. Now, Jay and I will discuss RESAT-1. Now, Jay was born in Russia. Now he's an Aussie. As such, he needs to learn our history. So this will be a history lesson for Jay. 60 years ago, Russia was part of the Soviet Union. On 1957, October the 4th, the USSR launched the world's first artificial satellite, Sputnik 1.
The first artificial Earth satellite in the world has now been created. This first satellite was today successfully launched in the USSR.
And here's some of the telemetry from it. Jay, what did they teach you at school about Sputnik 1?
Well, they did teach us that Soviet Union managed to get the first artificial object into space and into orbit, and then the first human into orbit, Yuri Gagarin, of course. But not much beyond that. They didn't really focus so much about space exploration.
And did they teach you anything about Australia's first satellite?
I don't think they ever touched any other space programs other than probably the moon landing of 69. So, yeah, but I heard it was like they managed to get the first satellite just 10 years after Sputnik. How did they manage that?
Yes, 1967, just 10 years after Sputnik 1. So how did that happen? Well, during 1967, the United States had been using the Woomera facilities in South Australia to launch a series of 9 rockets to investigate the physical phenomena produced when objects such as a warhead re-enters the Earth's atmosphere travelling at high velocity. The program was called Special Anti-Missile Research Tests, Australia. And is commonly referred to by its acronym, SPARTA, S-P-A-R-T-A. Now, SPARTA used 3-stage rockets. The first stage was a redstone booster burning alcohol in liquid oxygen. The second and third stages were small solid propellant rockets. The redstone had been developed as a medium-range ballistic missile. It had, in a modified version, being used to launch the first United States satellite, Explorer 1, in 1958. Many other early satellites were orbited by the Redstone-based rockets.
I don't actually recall hearing that name before. Anything remarkable about that about that rocket?
Well, the Redstone had also been used in the Mercury Man in Space to loft astronauts Alan Shepard and later Gus Grissom into suborbital space. And that was in 1961. Now, for SPARTA, 10 Redstones were shipped to Australia. Then, During the SPARTA project, it became apparent that only 9 redstones would be needed. An informal offer was made to Australia to use the spare rocket. After all, if we didn't use it, then it would cost the United States a lot of money to ship it back stateside. Once there, it would probably be scrapped. The proposal to use the rocket for a satellite launch energised the staff at the Weapons Research Establishment in Salisbury. But, keen as they were to go ahead, official approval was needed. Now, when RESAT was mooted, a proposal had to be put to the Cabinet of the Federal Government, which needed to give its approval. The argument that Cabinet found most compelling was simply that the RESAT offered a good measure of national prestige at a cheap rate.
It sounds something like Krylov's story back in Russia.
Yes, quite eerily so, in fact. As I say, Krylov managed to persuade Khrushchev and all those to allow him to put a satellite up.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't realise what a coup, in propaganda terms, it would be. So the point here is that Australia would not be spending its money alone. Yes, we would be paying for the design, construction and testing of the satellite. We'd also have to provide some of the onboard equipment, such as the transponders and telemetry system. But hey, the Redstone rocket was free, courtesy of the United States. The United States even provided the launch crew from the company TRW. Also, RESAT's use of the Woomera range could be billed to the joint project, that is, the United Kingdom.
So basically it all came down to money, that allowed to convince the authorities.
Yes, and what helped persuade Cabinet was a final financial twist. Part of the cost of the experiments would be met by Adelaide University. Hmm. And where would they get the money? Well, from a budget which derived a third of its funds from the United States Air Force. So NASA agreed to track RESAT with its global network of stations, so Australia didn't have to set up its own tracking system. And what's more, NASA donated the recording tapes. NASA also gave invaluable advice, so Australia saved heaps by not having to learn through trial and error, as the Americans had to do during the early years of the space age. The American contribution to RESAT was worth at least $1 million. Now that's 1967 dollars, when you could buy a house for a couple thousand dollars. Now obviously Australia got its entry to the Space Club at a very discounted price. Now Denham Henty, the Minister of State for Supply, agreed to RESAT on the condition that the project worked and there was no political fallout.
Sounds just like Krylov's promises to Khrushchev.
Yes, Krylov, wanted to gloss over the fact that this thing could fail. Well, Arthur Wills, who had done various jobs in the Department of Supply, was, in 1967, the chief defence scientist. And he later admitted that, and we quote, "We now know when we undertook this exercise that we were courting Lady Luck on the one hand and flying in the face of Providence on the other, and that the chances of success were pretty slender." End of quote.
Well, in Soviet Union, actually, not very many people knew about Sputnik 1's plan of being launched before the actual launch. They were very secretive about the project, and if nothing else, just in case it fails, then they'd have to deal with much less of a fallout after that. So what happened here in Australia? Did people know about the whole thing?
Well, yes, indeed. In fact, the whole world knew if they cared to listen to Radio Australia. Here is a news item I recorded in New Zealand off shortwave radio.
Australia is to be launched from Woomera later this year with an American rocket. The United States will make a SPARTA Redstone rocket available to put the Australian satellite into orbit. Britain will take part too. The Minister for Supply, Senator Henty, said in Canberra today that the satellite would be cone-shaped and would weigh about 100 pounds. Its main purpose would be to improve understanding of the effect of the upper atmosphere on climate and weather.
So that was from Radio Australia.
So Sputnik 1 was essentially just a middle sphere with some spikes coming out of it. What was the shame of VSAT?
Yeah, well, those spikes on Sputnik, of course, were the radio transmitting antennae. So VSAT was built around the third stage of the launch vehicle and was not intended to separate from it, unlike Sputnik, which separated from the R7 rocket. The satellite was an aluminium alloy cone a little over 2 meters long. And with a mass of 72.5 kilograms, it had less mass than the 83-kilogram Sputnik 1. That was the world's first artificial satellite, which, as we said, had been launched 10 years earlier. Now, here's part of a documentary from the time of that construction.
On the 29th of November 1967, Australia joined the Space Club of Nations by successfully launching from its own soil an Earth satellite of its own making. The project, which evolved from a program of upper atmosphere research that has continued over many years, was a joint effort of the Weapons Research Establishment and University of Adelaide. Design and manufacture of the satellite was conditioned by the short duration of the project, which from acceptance to launching day was only 11 months. The launching vehicle to be used was a US Sparta three-stage rocket, one of a series that had been fired at Woomera for research purposes. The satellite was so designed that both the third stage of the rocket and the instrumented nose cone would go into orbit together without separation. In all, three satellite cones were made. The first as a model for the structural design, the second as a space model to check the internal arrangement and accessibility of components, and the third as the actual flight model. The structure was of strong ring and stringer construction, braced by an aluminium outer skin 48 thousandths of an inch thick. Loads of up to 1,000 pounds were applied progressively at 7 points on the structure to simulate the forces arising from acceleration. Over 70 strain gauges were used to measure the deformations produced. Drop tests were done to simulate the effects of acceleration with short rise time, such as might occur during launch or the firing of the upper stages. The design allowed for acceleration up to 40 G. Vibration tests were carried out on the flight cone. The cone was subjected to a spectrum of vibrations which would encompass all frequencies likely to be met with in flight. Measurements of accelerations in longitudinal and transverse directions were made on this centrifuge. The structural cone that was used included components and sub-assemblies. Extensive modifications to the WRE centrifuge and careful balancing adjustments were made prior to these tests. In these torsional impact tests, the shock forces achieved during the sudden braking simulated those that would be caused when the spin-up motors were fired. Here, tests were being made of the mechanism which ejected the protective plate covering the instruments that were exposed to solar radiations during flight. The plate was spun off by the centrifugal force arising from the rotation of the cone.
Right. So Sputnik 2 carried a dog named Laika. Unfortunately, she died soon after because the satellite's cabin overheated. But anything relevant to that was with the reset?
Yes. Thermal control is an essential design feature of all satellites. After all, they are exposed to the intense heat of the sun. Without thermal control, the electronics and instruments inside the satellite will be roasted, like Laika was, and will fail.
Hot dog. Sorry. So how did the Aussies solve the problem?
Well, VSAT was painted white and black to maintain a balance between heat absorption from the sun and radiant cooling at night. Inside the satellite, the heat had to be evenly distributed to maintain a constant temperature.
Okay, so what happened with the satellite?
Well, they solved the problems on American advice, and they used a special white paint to do this. This special paint was imported for the job at considerable expense. And in a 48-hour stint, quick-drying coats of this expensive paint were applied. The two painters sustained themselves by occasional visits to the pub, in true Aussie tradition. Only much later did it come to light that the paint of the wrong specification had been shipped from America. its properties were no different from those of any household white enamel. I'd just say Coralie didn't have that problem. But anyway, we'll continue the story of Resat on next week's The Space Show. Coming up now is Purple Haze with Nick Black.